if I didn't have this like very, very strong conviction that this is making the world a better place, that it needs to exist, that it's doing good, and that it matters, I think it would be very hard to get up each morning with this sort of optimism that you have to have and say, like, this is all worth it and it's great.
Tap into the minds of change makers creating real impact on people and our planet. It's time to live your purpose. I'm your host, Dale Wilkinson, and this is Goodmakers. Hey there, welcome to episode 38. I'm so glad you've tuned in, and I'd love for you to stick around. So if you haven't done so yet, hit subscribe and you'll get notified each week when new episodes drop. I interview social entrepreneurs and change makers making a difference in this world to get tangible takeaways that you can implement in your day-to-day to help you create a career and life of purpose. And come put those skills to good use and join us at goodgigs.app, where you can access career opportunities, courses to continue your learning, and a community of good humans just like you. On this episode, I got to chat with an incredible human that's helping people speak up in the workplace safely. Claire Schmidt is the CEO and co-founder of All Voices, a platform that allows employees to anonymously give feedback to company leadership. We talk about how the product works and how it's been helping employees voice injustices in the workplace and then allowing companies to fix those issues. Claire talks about the inspiration behind All Voices and her experience taking the product to market right at the height of the Me Too movement. She also talks about what it's like to be part of her team and what she looks for in candidates when hiring. So let's jump into my chat with Claire Schmidt. Claire, how you doing? Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm doing great. How are you?
I am pretty good. Actually, let's do a temperature check. We've just wrapped up Q1 of 2021, which sounds unbelievable to even say that. How are you feeling? There feels to be in Los Angeles, the mood is starting to change. People are getting vaccinated. People are out and about. What's happening on your end?
Yeah, I'm definitely sensing a shift in people's moods and just kind of a feeling of hope that maybe hasn't existed for a while. Thinking back to this time last year, everyone was sort of panicked and kind of withdrawing from the world. And now I feel like it's definitely opening back up and people are starting to feel excited about the future.
Yeah, let's hope that continues.
Yeah, I agree.
So you're the CEO and the founder of All Voices, which is a platform to help employees anonymously give feedback to their company leadership around any issue that they may have in the workplace, around harassment, bullying, any kind of toxic environment. I would love to get into exactly how it works. But first, can you let us know how you came up with the idea and what was that initial problem that you were looking to address?
Yeah, so I guess to set the stage a little bit, it was 2017 and I was working as vice president of technology and innovation at 20th Century Fox. So every day I was going to work thinking about how technology could be plugged in to help solve problems or make processes work better. So that was my mindset at the time anyway, just in my day-to-day job. And I read Susan Fowler's blog post about her experience at Uber and just became kind of fixated, for lack of a better word, on the situation that she found herself in. So for anyone who didn't read that blog post, Susan Fowler was a junior engineer at Uber. She was sexually harassed by her manager on her first day. She had evidence. She brought the evidence to HR and they basically told her, like, sorry, there's nothing we can do about it. And so my mind went immediately to, you know, not just thinking about Susan's specific case, but thinking of kind of the bigger issue as a whole, which is that because of examples like this, employees are scared to speak up at work about issues, not just harassment, but all different types of culture problems and interpersonal issues and across the board, even just feedback or questions. And so they end up staying silent. And the cost to individuals and to organizations is so great that silence actually costs companies lots of money in the form of losing great employees, reputational damage, being sued in some cases. And in Susan's case, she wrote this blog post and it did definitely impact Uber's reputation. So I was thinking about, it's not just that employees should want things to change. It's also that companies should, because the current system is not working. And there are many data points and anecdotes that make that clear. So that was what got me really excited to start All Voices. And the idea came together over, you know, a long period of time, many months of research and talking to employees. But it started with that kernel of, I think the process for employees speaking up is very broken and needs to be fixed.
At that point, you obviously had the tech experience, but did you have the HR experience with the people ops team? Is that something that you had to dig into a little more?
Yeah, I had to learn about that. So I in a previous life, I was a consultant. And so consulting is all about like listening to experts and asking the right questions and getting information that helps you build your understanding of that world, whatever it is. So I started this process by actually just reaching out to a lot of people in HR, also lawyers, company leaders, and also employees, people who had been through difficult things at work in the past. And yeah. So that's really what I spent the spring and summer of 2017 doing.
And 2017 was, that was when the Me Too movement was really kicking off and started, right?
Yeah. So I decided to leave my job at Fox in October and I told them, and they were sort of like, you know, we thought this was going well, but we understand that you have this idea, you want to pursue it. And then about a week later, the Harvey Weinstein news came out and the Me Too movement kind of exploded. And all of a sudden everyone was like, oh, there is a huge need for what you're doing or what you're planning to do.
You go and do it. So you actually had that support. Yeah, that's awesome. And you've had great success. Like you've raised $3 million in venture capital funding last year. You have a whole bunch of companies on the platform, including GoPro, Thrive Market, Zillow. Can you walk us through the actual platform and how it works?
Yeah, definitely. So like I said, this evolved over time, right? We didn't come out of the gate with exactly the product that we have today, but in essence, what it is it's an anonymous reporting tool that allows employees to basically, in as barrier-free a way, report issues and share feedback with leadership. So each company that signs up with us is given a unique URL. They give that to their employees. We do a lot with them to kind of market and promote it to make sure employees are aware of it. When the employee submits their feedback, that's really the beginning of the process. So you know, with something like a culture survey, once you complete the culture survey, you're kind of done. But All Voices is really different. So it's actually the jumping off point for a conversation between you and someone at the company about whatever you've brought forward. Now, if you said, we really want different types of sparkling water in the cafeteria, it may be a very short conversation. It might be as short as, thank you for your feedback. We'll take that into consideration. But if you talk about bullying or harassment or mistreatment or something going on in the culture that's kind of structural, there's going to be someone from HR or legal or whoever, even the executives in the company, who may want to actually have a conversation with you and understand more about the situation, provide resources, coaching, support, encourage you to participate in an investigation if it's really serious. So all of that actually happens through our system as well. And you can remain anonymous as the employee throughout that process if you want.
Awesome. And then once that company gets that feedback, and it could be around a serious issue, does All Voices come in and help companies that need it if they don't have the ability to change their culture or address this particular issue that's being brought up?
Yeah. So at first, when we first launched the tool, we actually structured it so that we were the ones following up with employees and kind of serving as an intermediary. And we saw very quickly with some of our first customers that they wanted to be the ones to have that conversation. They actually didn't need us intervening to that extent. A lot of times you know, leadership at a company does know what to do. And they do have a unique culture and processes and policies in place. Right. So for us, what we realized very quickly was we needed to actually just get out of the way a little bit, let the employee speak to the correct company leader. And then if the company does have questions, or we share like best practices with them, we share benchmarking information with them. So we do give them input and support on an ongoing basis, but a lot of them are pros. They've been doing this for 30 years. Like they don't necessarily need our team to get involved.
Got it. Where, how did you test it? So, and at what point did that, when you left in October from 20th Century Fox, what had you actually, had you built anything then? Did you have revenue or clients? How did you know it was the right time to go full-time into it?
So throughout the summer, it was just me having casual conversations with people when I was not at my day job. So a lot of like weekends and nights asking people, like HR people, for example, hey, would you ever use, like, here's what I'm imagining. Would you ever use this at your company? If not, like what might be the barriers that would get in the way of you being able to adopt it? And then taking that feedback over time and synthesizing it and basically building, we built a prototype in the fall that was like, okay, this is what the user experience will be. This is what the administrator will see on the back end.
Yep.
And then putting that in front of people. So we did a lot of, especially on the employee side, a ton of user testing. Like, where would you start to feel uncomfortable? Like, we asked demographic information in the very early version, and everybody was like, this makes me uncomfortable. This is kind of against what you're trying to do in the first place. So gathered all that feedback over 2017. And then we announced what we were building in November of 2017 in kind of the thick of the Me Too movement. And from that, we had a ton of inbound interest. So companies coming to us and saying, hey, I read about you in CNN and Mashable and wherever. We need this at our company. We don't want to have, you know, and they were being really proactive. We don't want to have issues that we're not aware of that come out in the media later. So we had our first paying customers before we had our product complete.
Oh, wow.
And signed contracts. Yeah. So there was never like a beta testing period or, you know, free trial. It was like, okay, we're live and this is how it works. And then taking feedback from there.
And we're going to pay you for it. Like now, do you think you would have had that same start if it wasn't for the Me Too movement?
No, definitely not. I think the Me Too movement, in hindsight, looking back, it was sort of the beginning of this shift change that we've seen. And we talk about a lot, which is before Me Too, it almost was acceptable when companies had these sort of public crises, like the Susan Fowler blog post at Uber, for example. It almost was acceptable for them to say, oh, we didn't know we had such a widespread issue, or we didn't know our employees were unhappy. And that was really viewed as a fine excuse kind of in the public's eye. And what changed with the Me Too movement was that all of a sudden that was not an acceptable excuse anymore.
Right.
And you as a company are responsible for knowing what's going on with your employees, whether they're coming forward to you or not directly. And if they're not coming forward to you, you're still responsible for what's happening. So you need to find other channels for them to speak up is really the solution. So I think had we launched 5 years earlier, no one would see a need for our product.
And has that continued that sales process going into enterprise companies and enterprise clients? It's not that big of a sell. It's a pretty easy pitch.
Yeah, I just think because of the way the world has changed, companies now really understand the messaging around like, you need to know what your employees are thinking and what their experience truly is. And they may not be comfortable coming forward to you directly to talk to you about that. And I think we saw, you know, a different, but a similar thing happen during the George Floyd protests and the anti-racism movement really taking off last year. I think companies realized, okay, we also need to be proactive about anti-racism work and actually making changes related to diversity, equity, and inclusion, as opposed to just talking about it. So I think there'll continue to be these moments in time where that's emphasized, but I think things have changed permanently and there's no going back to the way things used to be.
I love it. Did you see in that last year in 2020 with everything that was going on with Black Lives Matter, George Floyd protests, Did you see in the data, are you able to see an increase of feedback to companies over the past year?
Yeah. So we, in addition, I should have mentioned this earlier, but in addition to the product that we provide to companies, we also have a publicly available tool on our site. So today you can go to our site and you can report an issue. And if your company is not signed up with us, we'll still share that report with them regardless. So we were seeing a huge increase in reports coming in over basically starting last March. I think reports like doubled or tripled during that time period, both related to, you know, the anti-racism movement and people calling on their companies to do more around diversity, equity, and inclusion, especially people whose companies had been posting publicly about support for that movement, but then behind the scenes not walking the walk. And also people submitting reports and feedback about COVID-19. You know, it was a really unique moment in time where people were having kind of the economic anxiety of what's happening in the world, what's going to happen to our company, are we going to make it?
Yeah.
And what about my health and safety? What about the fact that I'm watching my kids at home? So it was this tension between like actually needing more and being more scared to speak up than probably ever before.
So was it an increase with the clients that were already signed up on All Voices as well as employees coming to the free public tool?
Yeah. And we don't really do anything with our customers' data because of the agreements that we sign with them, but we're able to dig in and analyze the public data. And I think overall there was just an increase in volume across the board. And then when we drilled into like what's the nature of it with the public reports, it was really closely related to those two issues.
And has that been, if we're looking at kind of all the data over the last couple of years, what are the top common issues that people have in the workplace?
So it's interesting. When we launched, we thought the most common topics that would be reported about would be also the most serious, because the hypothesis was that those would be the most scary to speak up about in person. So alternate channels would work the least well for it. But what we found was actually the opposite is true. So people are using the tool most frequently to talk about, to submit feedback, to submit questions, to talk about culture issues within their company. And the most serious issues like sexual harassment are actually least common, I think, because they're happening the least frequently.
Gotcha. With the public tool, what kind, and in the last year with that increase in volume, generally what's the feedback like from the companies? So when you do submit it to a company that isn't on the network, are they receptive to it? Is it depends who, you know, who's getting it?
Yeah, it just totally depends. A lot of them just say like, thank you for sharing this, or this is great to know. I think we try to make it very clear to them that like, if this employee isn't speaking up through our tool, then they're either going to be doing it somewhere public, like Glassdoor or Blind, or somewhere that can actually damage your reputation, like on social media. So you should want them to feel heard. And that's why we provide this for free. And we also provide the company with the way to follow up with employees directly after they submit reports. So even though they're not paying us, we think it's so important for them to respond back and to make sure that those employees feel heard.
Do you have advice for employees other than the public tool that you offer, because they may think that, or maybe they did submit and the company hasn't done anything? Do you have any advice for employees that are potentially facing a serious issue at work and don't know how to go about it for fear of retribution?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really tough problem. And I think that's the whole reason that we started this company, is that I don't really see solutions out there that are working well. I think everything else, like some of the things that I mentioned, like posting on Glassdoor or posting on Blind, that might feel kind of good to like vent publicly and to get it off your chest. But at the end of the day, I don't think those are driving change at companies. Change in policies, change in trainings being offered, changes in communication and the way that companies talk about what's acceptable behavior and what's not. So right now, the only real solution that I have to offer is the one that we built.
Yeah.
Unless you're comfortable speaking directly to leadership at your company. If you're comfortable, that's certainly an alternative. And I think that can work for some people. But I think there are a lot of people that that doesn't work for. And so we're trying to meet them where they are.
Yeah. Yeah. And if it doesn't work for you, if you're listening and it doesn't work for you, check the show notes. I'll have the link to where you can go to the free tool that you can use with All Voices. Claire, I want to talk about the trajectory that you're on. You're a solo founder, correct?
Yeah, I have a co-founder actually, but he's not really as involved in the day-to-day. Like, I'm the CEO and co-founder.
What has that experience been like? Was this the first startup that you've created, going out pitching to investors? Are you able to give us a little insight into what your journey was like and is like?
Totally. It's a very, very unique experience. The advice I would give to anyone who's thinking about starting a company is just make sure that you are like so incredibly passionate about what you're building, because I think otherwise there's just no way to sustain the mindset that you have to sustain over a very long period of time. You're kind of like swimming upstream and you have to keep going for a long time. It's like it's a marathon, not a sprint. To back up a little bit about my journey. So I never set out to be a founder. That was not my goal. I didn't want to be an entrepreneur. I've worked at, you know, some startups, some bigger, more mature companies, some smaller companies. And I really enjoyed kind of the variety of experiences. So this was never me thinking to myself, I should start a company. Let me think of what idea I should start. It was kind of the opposite, where I was very happy in my job at Fox, actually, and fulfilled. And then this kind of came to me and I started talking about it with more and more people and getting more and more excited about it, including my co-founder. And finally, I just realized, like, if I'm getting this excited for like 6 o'clock to roll around so I can go home and like have a call with someone about like the legal requirements for an anonymous reporting platform, like I should probably pursue that.
Right.
So that's really how I ended up here. And I think if I didn't have this like very, very strong conviction that this is making the world a better place, that it needs to exist, that it's doing good, and that it matters, I think it would be very hard to get up each morning with this sort of optimism that you have to have and say like, this is all worth it and it's great.
Yeah. So how did you find your co-founder? Did you have a previous relationship together?
No. So actually we met during this time that I was like fixating on this idea and thinking about it and talking about it with everyone that I met. So
yeah.
He was just one of the people that I met during that time. And I was talking to him about it and he was like, oh, like this is awesome. He had been a CEO of a large company in the past. And so he said, like, this is actually something I really could have used, because I tried to have an open door policy and it worked for a few people, but most people never took advantage of that. And so I felt like I was missing out on insights about what my employees were experiencing on a day-to-day basis. So his excitement about it and also perspective on how it could be so much bigger than just reporting about harassment and kind of like bad things or issues was really valuable very early on and really helped shape All Voices into what it is today.
What about the fundraising process? What was that like? Did you, because you already had, you got some press, you got some contracts in, when did the fundraising happen? Was that just, you didn't really have to pitch, you got that press and you got some interest and investors came along with those clients as well?
Yeah. I mean, it was all kind of happening at the same time. So like the press and the product being sort of built out and prototyped and some of the initial customers coming to us and saying like, hey, we need this tool. And my fundraising process, it was all happening at once. Like right when I left my job, it all kind of hit.
Wow.
So this is not the time of year that I would recommend for other people to fundraise, but like really December, November, December, and January is when it was all happening on the fundraising side. I actually found a couple of really, really supportive early investors, like right away, angel investors, Spencer Raskoff, who was at the time the CEO of Zillow, and mm-hmm. Adam Miller, who's the founder and CEO of Cornerstone On Demand. Both of them very early on said, you know, we believe in this, we're supportive. And I raised on a note. And so they like wired me their money. So that was super easy, especially when I think of it relative to like the seed stage fundraise, which I'm happy to talk about too. But at that time, you're just selling an idea. It's, you know, you might have a little momentum, like the prototype and some early interest and some press. But all you need at that time is people who just believe in the concept and think you're the right person to execute. And then later it gets trickier because you have metrics, you have numbers, and you're being evaluated on very different things at the seed stage than before you have a product.
What do you think was easier? Which stage of raising money, which was easier?
Pre-seed. Pre-seed. Wow. So much easier, I think. And it, everyone's experience is different. But the other thing to keep in mind is this like amazing surge of momentum from the Me Too movement, people scratching their heads all at the same time and saying, we need a solution for this. And me raising my hand and saying, hey, actually, I've been working on this for 6 months.
Yeah.
And I have one. There was some serendipity in that timing that was just different than when I was raising seed.
How did you get the press?
I worked with, it was interesting. Like I decided to, the Harvey Weinstein news came out. I decided to leave my job. Like this all happened very quickly within a few week period. And so reached out to someone, a friend of a friend who runs or used to run a PR firm. And she basically just booked like, I think one or two full days of like back to back meetings and calls with like Yahoo and CNN and all of these, you know, Variety. And so it all hit like within the same couple of day window.
Yeah.
And I think that was a big contributor to a lot of the inbound that we got because we didn't do any paid marketing. So it was organic search. And because it's, you know, like CNN has great SEO. So people would search for what we have, this anonymous reporting tool or harassment reporting tool, and they would find us first.
And at this time, you still didn't have a, you had a prototype or you hadn't come out with a prototype yet?
We had a like non-fully functioning prototype. So when I was showing it to investors, I was showing them PDFs. Like I wasn't showing them a live demo. I was just flipping through my slides that showed what the product looked like.
So it's like, do it, jump in anyway. If you've got an idea that is relevant to something that is topical at the moment that could be picked up by press, even if you don't have a fully functioning product, like go for it.
Yeah, I really believe that. I mean, and lots of people don't even have the option to get to where we got to, you know, because they kind of need to raise money in order to build something. So we were able to put up a little bit of money up front to at least get something built out slowly. Yeah.
How about the angel investors? Were they just contacts that you had, or was that in the process of doing the customer discovery?
Those were like contacts and people in my network, people in my co-founder's network. And so as soon as we had, I think, commitments from those two, then the rest came together pretty easily. So we ended up raising like $1.1 million in total, including from Graycroft, which is a big LA-based VC, and a number of like smaller VC firms, and then angel investors as well.
Was there any difference? I mean, this was your first time. This is your first startup. So maybe you don't have anything to reference it to, but being a mission-driven company, was there anything kind of different with the pitch to investors?
Yeah, I think, I mean, and I don't mean to sugarcoat it. Like the experience was still, you know, it still took a lot of effort to go through even at the pre-seed stage. But I think there was a bit of, for some investors, like a bias against what we were doing because of the social mission. So are you sure this shouldn't be a nonprofit? Like, that's a question that I got. I don't think this is a venture scalable business. You know, I had comments like that early on, I think because of the social mission. And I think the social mission is part of what drives me, but that's not necessarily what an investor cares about. So it's about finding people that understand the bigger vision and how the social equality aspect of it is just one piece of the puzzle.
Were you able to do your research before hitting up investors to see if they were going to be values aligned, or is that something that you kind of found out while you were doing the pitch?
It's so hard to know, honestly. Like you can look on people's websites and you can talk to your friends and stuff. But at the end of the day, like, you never really know who your idea is going to resonate with or why. And so my approach was basically just to meet with anyone who would meet with me and talk to them about what I was thinking. And it's kind of like dating in a sense where either you're on the same page or you're not. And if you're not, you really don't want to force it, because why would you want to be working with someone that doesn't really want to work with you? So
yeah,
the dating analogy is a little awkward because of like the nature of what All Voices is all about. But
right.
It's just the mindset of not getting dejected or upset when someone rejects you, because honestly, it's a really good thing to know that they don't want to work with you. And it's not even about you personally, but it's about your idea or your business. And you want them to weed themselves out of the process. You don't want someone who feels kind of mediocre about your business on your cap table working with you every day.
So listeners, we have launched our Good Gigs community. We're a couple weeks in, and I have Sue here with us, who is our community manager, and she is so cool. If you have not met her yet, you've got to come to the Good Gigs community, check it out, meet Sue and all the awesome people that we've got there. Sue, what's up? How you doing?
I'm good. How's it going? It's been a lot of fun.
Right? Talking about fun, we had our first event in the community last night. It was a live Q&A with Scott Evans, who was the host of NBC's Access Hollywood and NBC's World of Dance. And we did this live Q&A of how to speak with confidence and impact. And it was pretty cool. What do you think of it?
I thought it was awesome. It was amazing to see folks. We had from South Africa to Australia to both sides of the coast of US. And so it was amazing to see folks in different walks of social impact. And of course, Scott was just amazing, just, you know, captivated our attention for over an hour and was gracious to stay on. And, you know, he had us just hanging on to his every word.
Right, which is what he does. He's so good at it, and why we wanted to get him into the community. There was a whole bunch of tips in there. I really liked when he was talking about how to speak to the camera. You know, you're not speaking to someone in person, but it was like, how do you make sure that you kind of come across as authentic? And his tip was to pretend that you are talking to your best friend when you're looking at that camera. The mindset is like that you've got a secret for them that's going to make their life a little bit better today.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool.
I did. I loved especially when he said it doesn't have to make their life a lot better. It just has to make it a little bit better. And I think that alleviated some of the pressure you have, especially around like social impact of, we got to make a big impact. We got to make a big difference. And he's like, oh, just a little bit better.
And there were so many more tips, and we recorded it. So if you want to check it out, come to the Good Gigs community, and the replay is there, and we're going to have more events like that.
Yeah, I'm excited. I think this has been the coolest part of Good Gigs is, you know, social impact can encompass so many different things. And when you gather people who just want to make a difference, you get folks, you know, who are doing landscaping to, you know, designers to developers to sales folks, like it's everything. And it's amazing how they're channeling their skills for good.
So if you're listening, come over to goodgigs.app, click on community and come join us. Come join me and Sue.
Yeah, we'd love to hear your story.
We mentioned before we started recording that you have doubled the size of your team just in the last year. How has that been doing that remotely? You were headquartered in Los Angeles, and then obviously COVID hit, and since then you've doubled your team. How's it been managing a remote team while growing it?
It's honestly been really great. We used to work out of a co-working space in LA, which was nice, but we weren't there from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. every day all together. Like, my head of sales and I were like always driving around LA, going to meetings with prospects and meeting partners and potential partners and stuff like that. So we were already like, I would say, kind of hybrid. And that's very different than a lot of the places that I've worked in the past, where like, you have to be in your seat every day or you're not really working. So I think it helped us adapt that we were already like that as a culture. And then when the pandemic hit and we realized that we were actually getting an increase in demand for what we provide for our platform, we realized like we can't wait for the perfect people who are also in LA and looking for a job right at this moment. Like, let's open it up a little bit. Yep. And we hired our first account executive in June, and she's fantastic, and she's in San Francisco. And so it's like, okay, well, once we do that, now obviously the next one doesn't need. So then the next two we hired, one is in Boston and one's in New York. And so it kind of happened because we said, we're going to hire the best people that we can find for these jobs. And we don't care where they are, especially because of the pandemic. And then we've decided to build our culture around that. So we do a lot to build our culture and to do team bonding and stuff like that. And we're very intentional about it, but we're going to continue to be hybrid remote.
Awesome. What do you look for when you're looking at talent outside of the expertise and the skill set that they actually need for each role? Is there particular values that you have as a company and that you look for in talent?
Yes. So my very first job out of college, I worked at Parthenon. It's a consulting firm. I loved it. One of the things I loved most about that job, because we worked crazy hours, but I loved the people and the culture. And my second year there, I was like the, you know, junior person responsible for on-campus recruiting. And someone took me aside and said, like, just as a reminder, when you're looking to hire somebody, they need to be all three of these things: smart, nice, and driven. And one or two without the other just doesn't work for us here. And I felt like that was such a clear and crisp way of articulating, like, the values that matter to you as a company, what you look for in employees. And so I decided to just steal that. So that's the filter through which we look at everybody. And there have been plenty of people who we've interviewed who are incredibly smart, incredibly driven, you know, care a lot about what we're doing, would be a great addition to the team. But if we get the sense that they're not also really kind, they have to be a no for us. So it's right. All three.
Smart, nice, and driven. And how do you evaluate that during the process?
I think it's a combination of asking direct questions that can help you kind of tease that out of them, but also just kind of observing the way that they conduct themselves through the process.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not the questions that you ask and the answers that you get back that are the most telling. It's, is someone apologetic when they cancel the interview last minute? It's that kind of thing. So there's kind of like the tangible and the intangible that we use to determine whether someone would kind of fit our culture. And we have an amazing team. We have, on Fridays, we do all hands meetings that a different team member is in charge of each week. And we did a gratitude exercise last week. And I was writing, I'm grateful for this person because of X. I'm grateful for this person because of X. And then they all got read aloud. Every single person I was writing about, I was like bursting with gratitude for them because there's just so much to say because they're so incredible. And I have never felt that way in a work environment before. So it's really exciting.
And it's your team. You're heading that up. That must be pretty cool.
Yeah. And I have to give a lot of credit to the team leads. Like, they do a ton of the interviewing and vetting, and yeah. I often just have like a casual call or two with somebody. So it's a group effort, and they have done such a good job of making sure to kind of keep our culture strong as we grow.
How would, on paper, and people are applying to open positions, how would someone stand out, and how would someone try and demonstrate those values, smart, nice, and driven?
So some of our employees that I have really, really enjoyed working with actually did not come through a traditional like interview process. There was no posted job. With a few of them, like, they came to me either just a cold email, or in the case where I knew them already, or we were acquaintances or something before, asking to have coffee or whatever and saying, hey, I think you need this at your company. Here's why. Here's what I can bring to the table. Here's what I'm going to do for you. Here's what I'm going to take off your plate. So with a lot of those early hires, that's actually how they happened, which it doesn't obviously scale as things grow. But I do think if you're looking for a job and there's a company that you're just like so fired up about and passionate about, you might as well try to find someone's email who would be a potential hiring manager and send them an email about why you care about it. Because those, when you like pour your heart and soul into your company all day, every day, and then someone sends you a note saying how much they love what you're doing, how they can help you grow, you can't help but be very persuaded by that. So that's the one thing that I would suggest.
Awesome. So if someone's looking at your career site, they don't see a position that would be potentially suited for them, that you are open to a cold outreach, but, you know, come prepared, come and actually pitch to you what you would bring to the company, why you would be a valuable team member.
Yeah. And do that for open positions as well. I mean,
yeah,
really lead with like why you're excited about what the company is doing and why, how you can help, you know, take the company to the next level. I think that's incredibly compelling, whether there's a job or not.
Yeah. What is the next level for All Voices in 5 years' time? Where do you plan to be?
Oh my gosh. Well, my long-term vision is that every company has All Voices for their employees. So that's like the North Star. That's what I'm looking toward every day. And I think there's a number of ways to do that, right? There's building awareness of what we do as a company. There's building an amazing product that people are telling their friends and peers and colleagues about. That's working, right? That's achieving the goals that it sets out to achieve. And that's helping company leaders achieve their goals. There's building a fantastic team that is going to be coming up with like creative ideas every day and executing on those in a fantastic way. So I think there's so many ways to get there. And the next 5 years for me is just about like staying on that path and making sure to do all the things that I need to do as a founder to make sure that that goal is achieved. So hiring great people, fundraising when and if we need to, making sure that our product is continuing to develop and continuing to be innovative. So that's what's really exciting to me.
That's awesome. I was going to ask this before, actually. Have you been able to see the impact that All Voices have been able to have with these companies? Is there anything that's actually measurable in terms of things that they've changed?
Yes. So there's the qualitative, right? Which is like, we hear from our customers all the time that it's helping them, that they feel like retention is improving, or they employees are coming up to them and saying like, we're so happy that we have this tool in place, even if they don't need to use it right that moment. So there's these sort of like anecdotes and success stories and case studies that we collect and gather and share when we're able to, or if we're given permission to.
Yeah.
And then there is quantitative data, which is number one, our retention rate is extremely high. So because we've been around, our product has been live in the market since spring of 2018. We now have customers who have been with us since the spring of 2018, and they've renewed every year. Some of them are on, you know, their fourth year with us. So I think that's telling. And then the other thing is we do, when a customer starts working with us, we do look at Glassdoor and see what their scores are for those top three scores that the site shows you. And we do track that over time and see whether it's improving over time or not. And we just looked at it, and I think 80% of our customers have had their scores improve since they started working with us.
Awesome.
And I think only the rest were like basically flat. And then I think 4% have gone down. So it's a combination of factors that kind of help us measure success. But we also ask, you know, we do like a kickoff session with new customers and ask them about their goals. And then we make sure to check in at 3 months, 6 months, 9 months. How are we doing in helping you achieve those goals that you have internally as an organization?
And if you are an organization that's listening and you do have some goals, check the show notes. I'm going to have the link to where you can get connected with All Voices, as well if you're an employee who is with a company that is not on the platform just yet, but you do have some feedback to give, I'll include the link to the free public tool that you have. Claire, thank you so much for the work that you're doing. I'm excited to see where All Voices go in the next few years. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. It was so great to be here and chat with you about all this.
What an inspiring story of how a business idea can just take off. I loved how Claire talked about the research she did to validate her idea. So if you have an idea, make sure you speak to the people that would actually be using your product, and make sure it's not just family and friends. Actually get out there and find the exact people that would use it. It will help you so, so much as you begin to build your product. And hey, if you are having issues in your workplace, check out the show notes and submit feedback on AllVoice's free public tool. Thank you so much for listening. Until next week, stay golden, my friend.